This is a question regarding compassion. You've always mentioned that the example that you always give, that when we talk about compassion, it's always the love of a mother to a child, for example. So how can we actually think about compassion that is not out of attachment? For example, you can, for in all spiritual tradition and in
you
the
can't.
World, we always say that motherly love is the
you can't. At our level, you cannot have compassion without attachment. But, by starting at that, you can reach compassion without attachment. Because why? We need a starting point. And we can't start at a level of a bodhisattva or a Buddha who has no attachment, because we obviously do. So at this level, to have compassion without attachment is impossible. You have compassion with attachment, but it's better than attachment without compassion. So with compassion, with some attachment, and doing meditations, understanding and study, and rehabituating ourselves, we can shift our compassion with attachment instead of 100% to 98, to 80, to 70, to 60, becomes less and less and less and less. So in the tantras, it doesn't talk about suppressing your passions. It talks about transforming the passions with a different motivation through time. That's why tantra is very effective for modern people today, where actually suppressing or stopping something is almost near impossible due to a lot of distractions and what's going on in the world. So instead of suppressing, you use it. It becomes something that burns itself out. So like that, right now at our level, to have compassion without attachment, impossible. So we have compassion with attachment, and we gradually change it, gradually. We work with it, and we be easy with ourselves. You understand? So at this level, impossible.
Okay, and further to that is, for example, when we talk about compassion, right, it has been, for example, for people like me, we're not realize or study a lot about compassion. What we can see daily is just like motherly love and all this. And most of the time when people they are kind to others, it's because some is because of responsibility, for example, families and children and all this. And some is because of you have expectation that they will help you back. So when we talk about compassion, I mean, not at the high level, the actual one, how do we actually develop compassion, and what it actually is on a very basic level that we can practice?
That we can see on a basic level?
Yeah, like how is it?
Rudy helping his brother is a basic level of compassion. Very basic.
Okay. Because like sometimes I get confused, because sometimes when you talk about compassion, it's like motherly love, that kind of thing. It's when I think about it, most of the time it's because of the attachment of the mother to the child. That one way that we can't actually develop compassion in that way, because it's attachment. And what actually made me think was what actually compassion is that we can develop from this level so that we can achieve that level.
Okay. At our level, it is not possible to develop unaffected, unattached compassion. That is confirmed. A mother takes care of its child due to its attachment to it, maybe because the child, in the case of royalty, if the child is a male, it's a male, it's some kind of heir, she gets some kind of prestige, like in ancient China, so her position in the court is secure. In an ordinary situation, maybe the mother had a child because she doesn't want to be lonely, or maybe she had a child because she's supposed to, society said so, and she takes care of it because no one else to take care of her. There are many, many reasons. What you're saying is her actual reason for taking care of the child. Her actual reason taking care of a child is not really purely 100% compassion or pure. Okay. Still, there are mothers who don't take care of their child. There are many mothers who don't care about the child. There are many mothers who don't actually watch their child or care what's going on. They're more interested in themselves. So compared to this person, they're still more better. Okay, that's one. Second thing is, when we think about what our mother has done for us, when we think about it, whether the mother gave us food, shelter, education, and care because we are an heir, or because we are her responsibility, or because she's forced to, it doesn't matter. The fact is that she gave us food. She gave us care. She gave us shelter. She gave us education. She gave that to us. Whatever her reasons for doing that, she still gave that to us. Because she gave that to us, we have a human body that has the potential to be a Buddha, to practice to become a fully enlightened Buddha. This potential came from this person. Although this person's compassion is not pure, still we get some benefit from it. So when we do our practices and we become more and more and more and more attained, right? Thinking about how this came about, that act that we can become attained, that level that we have reached, came from many different sources, came from many different people. Although their compassion is not pure, it is still very helpful to us. So because it's helpful to us and we were able to reach, maybe we're a business person, maybe we had a good life, maybe we became a star, maybe we became a Buddha, because of their help, we were able to attain that. From their side, whatever their motivation was, doesn't matter. From our side, we need to remember. From our side, when we remember their kindness, when we remember, it should stir emotions and it should stir the mind that wishes to repay the kindness back. So whether the mother is actually compassionately taking care of us or self-motivated to take care of us, she still took care of us. Therefore, she is better than many people in the world who not even out of responsibility would take care of us. Our school teacher didn't really take care of us. Our friends really didn't take care of us. And all these other people we met didn't really, really take care of us. So they're even worse than her. So it's very difficult to think about repaying people's kindness when we think about ordinary people that we meet off the street. But for our mother, it's easier to think about her compassion. Why? Whatever her motivation, she still helped us. Because of her help, we're able to reach whatever position we have reached. When we reflect on that kindness, the purpose is not to investigate further regarding her motivation. The purpose is to develop unaffected compassion towards this person and repay their kindness. So the purpose of doing the meditation upon the mother's kindness to develop compassion is not to examine the giver. It is to examine the person who has received. That is us. So in our meditations, when we meditate on how the mother kept us 9 months in her stomach, how she experienced discomfort, how she changed her lifestyle, how she lost her shape and her body and stretched her body out, and she went through a lot of hardships, and some mothers even die in childbirth, right? They have an option, they can kill us, they can have abortion, but they still had us, which is better than some people who didn't even have us. There are mothers, I'm sorry to say, who don't change the lifestyle. They take alcohol, they take drugs, they take all kinds of hot and very cold foods that affect the child, that the child can come out retarded or damaged, okay? So she's still better than the other person because she took some responsibility. That taking responsibility reflects some type of human care, okay? So when we do the meditation on the kindness of our mother, the purpose of the meditation is to develop a type of attitude that wishes to repay the kindness of others. So when we develop that attitude, we don't need to think deeper what their motivation was. Why? On this planet, among normal beings, it's very hard to find someone who has that kind of level of compassion. So therefore, when we think about that, when we meditate on the kindness of others, this overwhelming feeling of taking care of our mother comes. To respect our mother, not to talk back, not to hurt her, not to fight with her, and to not to damage her, and that in her old age, we serve her. We make sure she's all right. We give her whatever she needs. And if she doesn't need us, we don't create a burden for her. Having great compassion, developing great compassion must start somewhere. Who is the best person in our lives? According to the Buddhist scriptures, in general, it's our mother. Even more kinder than our father is our mother. So therefore, when we can develop this kind of compassion for our mother, and this type of feeling of repaying the kindness of the mother, what happens is this. The object is our mother, but through the object of our mother, we have developed the feeling of repaying kindness back. See, prior to this, most people don't think about repaying the kindness of anybody back. You say, hey, you pay kindness to the teacher back, your friend back, your lover, your husband, wife, say, no, they can take care of themselves. I don't need to take care of them. Most of us think, I don't have to repay anybody's kindness back. And so we go through a life that's very selfish. Give me, I use, take, whatever I want, whatever I need, you give to me, you owe it to me. And we don't even think about the other person. We don't think. So how to cut through this? For ordinary people like us, to cut through it, we must start at a starting point. That starting point is someone in our lives, whatever their motivation, has shown us help and care. So when we focus on the mother, we develop this care. We develop this type of thinking, someone took care of me. And then this feeling of softness comes. I will take care of her. I will help her. Then from this meditation, when we feel an owing of repaying our mother back, it will definitely develop. When that feeling comes, we expand it. We don't stick it with just our mother. Then, in the Buddhist belief, we believe that we've had hundreds and thousands of lifetimes. Every single lifetime, we've had a mother. Every single lifetime, a mother has been very kind to us, like in this lifetime. And those mothers, we may not recognize at this time, but they have been our mothers. What's the difference between the kindness of a mother from a previous life to the kindness of a mother in this life? So the next step of meditation for the meditator will think like that. What's the difference between someone who was very kind to you in a previous life and a person who's kind to you in this life? Those people contributed to who you are now. So therefore, who was my mother? Who was not my mother? It is definite that at one time or another, everybody was my mother. So therefore, when we think that everybody was my mother, we start to develop this kind of feeling that we owe kindness back to many people, many beings. And so this kind of all-encompassing feeling of repaying kindness to others doesn't develop for one or two, it develops for everyone. And then when we familiarize our feeling of repaying kindness to many beings on a broader scale, real compassion starts to arise. Real. But in the beginning, it is affected, not unaffected. It's affected. Why? We're repaying and contemplating on the mother's kindness because she did something for me. If she didn't do something for me, why should I think about her? So still, I'm taking. When I get something, I want to think. But at that level, you need to start at that level to develop a higher level. So when you develop the higher levels, that one doesn't matter anymore. You understand? So what happens is later, when we start thinking about many beings, and we think about their kindness, we can think about the people at work who's been very kind. We can think about people that we, in school, some teachers have been very kind to us, some auntie, uncle who gave us advice to help us through difficulties. And then we don't even have to think about only the kindness we have received. We can think about the kindness that other people have helped other people. For example, we know a lot of selfless people who have gone down to Johor Bahru to help with the flood victims. I think they're very kind. See, then we develop a type of mind that kindness is not dependent only on receiving it ourselves, but the fact that people can show kindness to others, we start opening our mind to them. So we're sitting here in a nice air-conditioned room, in a nice house. We have electricity, we have everything. Everything's really easy, the roads are clear, everything is normal. Well, a couple hundred miles down south, people's lives are completely different than ours. But we're not on a train, we're not on a boat, and we're not on an airplane going down there to help them. We're sitting here receiving a Dharma talk, having Coca-Cola. But there are people there who are really helping and working. Those are very compassionate. So, do we like to hear about people drowning? Do we like to hear about their crops being destroyed? Do we like to hear about their houses being run down? Do we like to hear they lost their babies? Do we like to hear they're sleeping out outside with the mosquitoes near a fire and they don't know what's going to happen tomorrow? Do we like to hear some of them don't have insurance? Do we like to hear that they have lost their cars, they have lost their savings? Do we like to hear little old ladies standing somewhere on a chair waiting for days for someone to rescue them? We don't like that. When we see that in the newspaper, we don't like that. So when we hear someone has gone down to help them, doesn't it relieve some of our guilt? Aren't those people kind? Because we're not able to do that. So therefore, the kindness expands to not only what people have done for us, it also expands to what other people have done compassionately to other people. Then it will bypass time and space, because then we won't only think about today's people who've been kind to today's situation. We'll think about in the past, and we'll read history about beautiful people who've helped other people selflessly. And so what happens is you start seeing your mind expand. And this wish to repay or to give something back for their kindness will not only extend to people who help you, it will extend to all people, all beings who have helped anyone. And you start feeling you owe them something. So when you get this feeling of owing them something, that they have done this, they have done that, they have done this, because you can't possibly help every single person in this world, even if you were a Buddha. Impossible. Okay? So therefore, there are many people helping other people in the world. You start feeling a feeling of gratitude, gratefulness, and relief. Don't we all feel relieved when we hear something in the world is going wrong, and then we hear someone go and help them and rescue them or donate? I feel very relieved. In fact, sometimes I just go, phew. Why? I'm not able to do it. I'm not able to. Like when all those nasty things was happening in Sri Lanka with the tsunami and all that stuff, I wanted to go there. I couldn't go there. There was a lot of red tape. I wanted to go there to help. There was a lot of red tape. I couldn't get over there. So therefore, when I heard people were going there to help, I was relieved. So I thought, those people are very kind. What did I do? I stayed at home. I lighted bar lamps. I lighted candles to Tara, to Setra, that these people get more help. I lighted more. I did pujas. I did incense offerings. That these people will receive help. And that the people helping them will not have problems. And the people helping them will get supplies and they won't get sick. So I made offerings and pujas for them. Just like when we had the flood victims, then I asked a few of my friends, because we don't have a place here, to go over to Dateen's house to make candle offerings. Whatever we're doing at that time, no matter how busy it is, we have to think about someone else for a change. We have to. So when we went over to make candle offerings at Dateen's house for those people and the flood victims, it isn't to relieve our guilt. We couldn't do anything. So we should be very happy to do puja there. We should be very happy to offer candles there. We should be very, not even talk about it and look at it in a very beautiful way. Why? I'm sure we had many other things to do with our lives, but we took that time away because no matter how busy we are or how tired or unhappy or how we haven't seen our friend in 50 years or we just won $3 billion and we're going to go buy this or do that or we just got a yacht. No matter how busy we are, maybe we're supposed to be the Queen of England, but somebody else was in a much worse situation than us that have no control, and we have control. So therefore, when we consciously go out and make offerings, and we do prayers, and we do that to collect the merit to expedite the rescue there, that is reflecting on kindness. Why? We're helping those people who went there to do something. We're helping them. Then when we heard about the weather conditions coming, people here in Kijara came here and do a Setra Puja. We saw the newspapers. We heard the meteorologists, their threats. We came here, we did our puja, nothing happened. Everything was fine. Everything was fine. I don't know if that's Setra, but I believe it is. But people came here because they cared. They didn't want all these disasters to come around this area for whatever reasons. So my point is, thinking about the mother's kindness is a starting point. It's a starting point. And it's not a practice to reflect on whether her kindness was real or not. It is a practice to make us realize that we are interdependent on everyone. Because we are interdependent on everyone, we need to repay their kindness. And so through this meditational path, we increase the kindness. If you want to read about this very well, you can read this book called, by Tarpa Publications, Meaningful to Behold. It is a translation of the How to Develop Kindness and Compassion based on the meditation, written by the great master Shantideva. Alright, so it is called Meaningful to Behold by Tarpa Publications. This book moved me. It affected me very much. The original is in Tibetan. Of course, originally it was in Sanskrit. So in any case, so when we start thinking about other people who help other people, and our compassion grows to that level, you'll see that if I find, oh, I see that Ben, I don't even know Ben very well, but I see Ben was helping Wai Ming, and I heard about it, and I'm very moved, I would want to encourage them. Maybe I'll go and buy flowers and give it to him. Maybe I'll buy some chocolates and give it to him. Maybe I'll give him a gift. He said, well, I didn't do anything for you. I said, you did do something for me. You did do something, because I couldn't do something for him, but you did it. And I thank you and I encourage you. So you start seeing yourself give gifts to people. You see yourself give things to people. You start seeing yourself give emotional support. You give prayers. You do pujas. You give money. You give yourself. You give your advice. You start giving so much to other people. Why? Because you live in a state of repaying other people's kindness. But it's not a repaying their kindness because you owe them. It is reflecting that we are all interdependent. And so since we're interdependent, wouldn't it be better to think about other people's kindness and return their kindness and to develop this kind of appreciation better than the opposite, where we live a whole life of thinking, my mother should do that to me. They owe that to me. I didn't ask to be born. It's their responsibility. So when we start thinking like that about our mother, then it's very easy to think about that from our friends, from our teachers. Well, my teacher's being paid by the state. They should educate me. And then we start going to the stores, and people are nice to me. We don't appreciate. We go to the waiters. We go to the restaurants. We're very bitchy and mean to them. Because why? They're being paid for their job. Why should I be nice to them? So then we go through life thinking that everybody should be doing this or should be doing that. I don't need to reflect on anybody's kindness. We start to live a life of independence, thinking we're not interdependent. And then this type of person develops what type of mind? Very hard, very cold, very selfish, very brash. Their manners become rude. Their speech becomes very hurting. Their actions become very brash. Why? They don't have any type of appreciation for their interdependence and their existence that is interdependent on other people's lives. So this meditation is very, very effective. Why? It turns you into a person that appreciates, that does something for others, and that makes you feel like you take personal responsibility for others. Instead of sitting there and saying, they owe it to me. How much have we come across people who feel like that? They owe this to me. They owe that to me. They should give this to me. They should give that to me. How many people have we come across that? What's their attitude? Do we feel nice around them? What's their energy? Even if you take an aura picture of them, what color is their aura? It's not positive. It's not yellow, that's for sure. So definitely. So therefore, this meditation of our mother is to develop an awareness that we are totally interdependent and dependent on others for our very survival and life. Totally. And to think along those lines, and not to only think, but that thinking becomes a part of your being, where your talk and speech and action always lives a life of appreciation, encouraging others, love, and incredible gratitude, and always thinking thank you to people. Then when you have that attitude, you will share what you have. You will give what you have. You will give of your time. You will give of your body. You will give of your speech. You will give of your clothes. You will give of your food. You will give of your money. You will give of your resources. You will give of your friends. And you're always trying to connect friends and friends to help each other in business. You're always trying to give gifts to people to encourage. Even when you hear someone has done something kind to other people, even if they didn't do anything to you, you give them gifts, or you send them a message, or even people you've never met or heard of, you'll be sending them gifts. Why? You realize the interdependence of how we live. So when you live in such a state of mind, even if you're not religious, to be around that type of person is beautiful. It's wonderful. And it's very, very fabulous. That's why meditation on compassion is not just sitting there saying, I'm very nice, I don't get upset, I don't get ugly, I don't react back, and people who are mean to me, never mind. That's not compassion. Compassion is what? Compassion is realizing the interdependence of our existence, and that we should take responsibility to encourage positive actions. And that we should give of ourselves. Highly realized beings, like Mahatma Gandhi, like Nelson Mandela, highly realized beings, they give of themselves. They can go through, like Mahatma Gandhi went through a lot of self-sacrifice. He starved himself, hunger strikes, to fight against colonialism. He never hurt one person. He never struck a weapon against one person, but he freed millions of people from difficulties through the practice of accepting other people's pain and getting his happiness over. And how did he win over freedom for many people? Through conscience. That is reflecting. So that's why, by reflecting on our mother's kindness, for normal human existence is very beautiful. When we're respectful of our mother, when we're respectful of our father, when we're respectful of elderly people, when we're respectful of older people, it's a very beautiful practice. Why is it a beautiful practice? Then there's some kind of order. There is some kind of order. Why should we be respectful to older people? We can learn from them. we can learn. And we should respect the difficulties that they went through their whole life. If we respect their difficulties, people will respect our difficulties. If people respect our difficulties, then our interdependent relationship becomes easier. We can't go through life saying, they owe this to me, they give this to me, they give this to me, they give that to me, and that's all. What kind of person do we become? But if we have a feeling of, I wish to repay other people's kindness, I wish to give back their kindness, I promise you, your stinginess and miserliness will melt. Will totally melt. Your emotional trauma, such as you feel pain, holding on to pain, will melt. I promise you. Your anger, or your ability to hold anger, will melt. And when you see another person, even though they've harmed you, hurt you, you will not think about what they did to you. You will think about the karma that will come back to them, and you will do everything you can to help them. You won't even think about what they've done to you. You will think what will happen to them, and you're more concerned about them. If you develop that type of mind, no unhappiness will come your way. You will never run out of money. You will never run out of resources. The whole world will be there to help you and assist you. Mahatma Gandhi, the Dalai Lama, all these people, Mother Teresa, they never starved, they never went hungry, they never was in want of money. Why? Why? Because they developed this type of mind of repaying other people's kindness. That is a much more beautiful way of living our life. Even if we don't believe in the next life at this moment, that's okay. But living a life of taking responsibility for other people is much more beautiful. So we shouldn't think of just our brother, just our father or our sister, or always what we've done. There are people who take care of hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people, and those people don't even come and say thank you to them, but it doesn't stop them from helping. So our little help to one person, or two people, or three people, or four people, five people, is very insignificant. Why? It is believed in the Buddhist text, and let me make this clear. It is believed in the Buddhist text. People in this life that we help and give and assist, yet there's no result, and they drain us, are people we've damaged in a previous life. We owe them. So in this life, if we're owing back our karma, owing karma, and we complain about it, in the next life we'll become like that. The next life, like that. Like, it never ends. How do we end it? How do we end it? Then we'll say, well, how come I always have to give the money? How come I always have to be the one that takes responsibility and help? And they don't. Because you know the Dharma. You know something better. So why should I always give and they don't have to improve and I improve? Because you know better. Look. If a father and a son, the father is 40 years old and the son is 5 years old, and they go to a shopping mall, and someone rams their cart by really fast and almost runs them over, and the kid throws a little BF and jumps up and down, starts crying and screaming, everybody there like, yeah, he's a kid. But the kid remains very calm, and the father jumps up and down and screams and throws a BF, everybody be like, grow up. So what's my point? If you know the Dharma, and you know the law of cause and effect, and you call yourself a spiritual person, and you've taken refuge, it is your job to absorb other people's suffering. It is your job. If you can't even absorb your own family sufferings, don't talk about all sentient beings. So, the meditation on compassion, the meditation on developing compassion, starting, not ending, starting with reflecting on the mother's kindness, is to open our minds to live a life of appreciation for others, and therefore when we appreciate others, we give to others and help others, right? When we give and help others, all of our inner turmoils and passions and anger and all the selfishness and miserliness melt away. That is the secret. From remembering other people's kindness, one's own passions and emotions and all these negative energies will become less. And less and less and less. That's very powerful practice. Therefore, when you see highly evolved beings, they can just give their time to people and not expect anything back. And they can give their knowledge to people and not expect anything back. They can give their money away. They can give their possessions away. They can give anything away. Food and clothes and whatever people need. They just give and give and give and give. And there's no limit. Sometimes they even give for things that they need, they take and they give away. That's a very highly evolved person. Why is that highly evolved? Because it's different than normal people. Normal people cannot do that. And that's the type of person that has meditated on compassion in their lifetime or lifetimes. That's a sign. That's a sign. So therefore, when we're in the presence of these people, how do they make us feel? They influence, bless, and encourage and inspire us to become the same. When we become the same, you know who gets the benefit? In the beginning, you may be helping your brothers, you may be helping your people, your friends, and you may be helping losers who never help themselves. You can be helping, but you'll be eventually coming across and helping people who change and transform, help many other people. And that will overcome the few losers that you have helped. Okay, but that is expectation, but that's our level. At the same time, when we help other people, we should help with a real sense of taking responsibility. Real sense of responsibility. We can become much better people if we take responsibility for our lives and for the people around us. So how they become or what happens to them, we should help them all the way. And sometimes we find it very difficult to help them. Do this meditation. Visualize they have died. And they're not with us anymore. Then we'll regret we didn't help. And when we help, it's very important to always think. And don't talk and don't advertise and don't let people know what you have done. I'll tell you why. When we do that, we can become habituated, and the whole point of helping is lost. Then no one appreciates why. All they hear is how much they've been helped, and they think, why are you helping me? Because you want to look like a saint? Very, very important. So this meditation is extremely powerful for developing compassion that wishes to liberate others with no sense of loss, and to give with no sense of loss, to share with no sense of loss, and to give what you have with no sense of loss. By giving with no sense of loss, you will create the karma to receive more and more and more. It will never stop. That is a guarantee. So even if we give with that kind of knowledge, it's still attachment, but it's different levels. So therefore, what's very important is the meditation on compassion is another method. It's another powerful method for us to cut through our selfish, self-centered emotions, which is the cause of all of our pain. Which is the cause. When we look at people who give, why do we look at people who give? People who give easily, it's very easy to see their heart. See, if you go deeper, we have to look inside their heart. It's very hard to see inside their heart. But we can see outside when they're always giving. And we can observe these people. They give to even people that don't do anything for them. They can even give to people they don't even know. They can even give to people they have no idea who they are. And they give to these people without any expectation, nothing. And all they want to know is if they're happy. Why? Because these type of people encourage the growth of compassion. And they have developed compassion. So you can check like that. People who are very miserly, and people who are very stingy, and people who are not able to give, is a very gross, G-R-O-S-S, indication of the level of their meditation. It means they're not at any level. So people who cannot give, they cannot give their time, they cannot sacrifice their effort, they cannot give of their knowledge, or they cannot give their money, they cannot give their help, they cannot give their very, or they give only on the basis of if they're forced to, embarrassed to, or they have to. This is a clear indication of the level of their meditation and the level of their mind. Why? What other ways can normal people judge other people? What other ways? It's very, very simple. So if for Buddhist practitioners, giving is very important. Giving is very, very important. It's a very important indicator of one's level of compassion. Then some people say, well, I only make $1,500 a month. What can I give? Well, when you do work, you can do it well. The people don't scold you. People don't have to remind you. That's giving. When you promise people something, you do it. That's giving. Why? You're not taking away from their emotions. They don't have to. When they're around you, they don't have to feel scared or nervous or at wit's end. Are you going to do it? Are you going to be responsible? Can you do it or not? You don't create any mental problems for them. That's why emotional giving is very important. What we say in our mouth, we do. When we say in our mouth and we do, and we promise it, that is giving. Why? What are you giving to the other person? What are you giving to the other person? You're giving them beliefs of their mind, emotional giving. You can look around. You can look around people. People who only take, give me. They talk, they don't give. They don't fulfill their promises. They only talk, they don't give. But they take. And they're very happy to take. What kind of energy do they have? Thank you. What kind of energy? What kind of energy do they have? And then people who always give, how do you feel around them? People who don't give, when you go out with them, you feel you're going to be shortchanged. You feel a little nervous. You feel you're going to be cheated. You feel very worried. Very uncomfortable feeling. Very uncomfortable. And then when you go for discussions with them, they promise, I'll do this, I'll do this. They talk, but they don't fulfill. How do you feel? That's not giving. Hey, I'm going to sweep out the center once a week, and then they don't do it. How does it make you feel? But when you're around people who give, who share, who keep their promises, who are emotionally responsible, they're very kind people. Why are they very kind? They develop a level of care for others where they force themselves to be emotionally responsible. People who are not emotionally responsible, they're not caring people. They're people who are used to taking and not reflecting on the kindness of others. They're emotionally very selfish. So these type of people, it's even more dangerous. More dangerous. Why? If they get things, they won't share. And by the time they get things, their mind's already settled into that type of thinking and that type of mode. Very hard to switch back. Very hard. That's why you say, oh, older people are set in their ways. Oh, yes. It's very true. Very, very true. And to always wait for others to pay, or wait for others to do, wait for others to clean, and you don't do, you expect them to do, and you just wait and wait and wait, is a sign of a person whose mind is extremely irresponsible, meaning what? They don't take responsibility for others. They don't reflect on the kindness of others. And they don't reflect on interdependence. And these people usually end up quite lonely, quite unhappy, whether they're rich or poor. When they're rich, people wait for them to die to get their money. And they're nice to them, not because they love them, because they want something. They feel it. And I've seen many older people like that. And then the people who don't have money, they're completely abandoned. Completely. Completely abandoned. Why? They have nothing to offer people. They've used their life for what? Getting. So this meditation on the mother is not to check whether our mother is pure or not. This meditation on the kindness of the mother is to develop, from our point of view, a type of attitude that wishes, that realizes the interdependence of that we live together. And it will be more beautiful and more harmonious if we actually took responsibility and shared kindness and went about out of our way to help others and not only keep back. It's not a meditation to look at, check their motivation. You understand? Yes?
That's very good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, this way around how to...
Wait, I have to tell you something. I was watching an interview with Oprah Winfrey and Madonna. And it was one of my favorites because I was watching this, and anyway, you know Madonna is a goddess, and Oprah's not bad either. In any case, Madonna had come on the show before, and she was quite obnoxious, and she was quite loud, and she was quite boisterous, and she was like, you know, give it to me, you know, I deserve this, the world owes me this, and I made it because of my hard work, I don't owe anybody anything, and you know, middle finger the whole world, that was her attitude. And so this time when she came on the show, she was very Kabbalistic, she was very spiritual, she was very calm, she had found herself. And she was very in tune and at peace, and she wasn't aggressive. And even negative things said to her, she wasn't hostile. She wasn't mean, or she wasn't rude. She just took it very well. And she was very much a lady. She was very calm, she was very mature. And so Oprah was saying to her, you know, Madonna, you're very different. You're very different these days. You're not like before. And Madonna was sitting there like this. She loved it. She was sitting there like this. And then Oprah was going on and on. Oprah was saying, you know, you're very different before. You're not as hostile. You're much calmer. And you seem to have taken life in a stride. You seem to accept things. And it's so much more easier to interview you and to be with you now. And it's actually a pleasure. I actually look forward to it now. And Madonna was like waiting for it to finish. And when she finished, Madonna was drinking all this in, and she turned around, blinked at her, and went like this. Thank you! And I was like, oh God, she didn't change. It was so funny because she was just drinking it all in. And she was like, you know, tell me more. I want to hear more. And even the way she pronounced thank you, I will never forget. It was with every teeth, every fiber of her tongue. She just went like this, and she blinked at her at Oprah. She's like, thank you. And I thought, oh, I'll never forget that. Never. The next time people compliment me, I'll just sit there and wait for them to finish. Of course, I won't rush them. And then when they're done, I'll make sure they hear me say, thank you. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're a thug. You're a reincarnation of some thug. Okay.
Reason why I ask the question is, one is to think about compassion. Another way is to think about how to get less attached. Because a lot of people, when you talk to them about compassion, right, they only relate to the superficial level, and then they'll say, oh yeah, I'm very compassionate because I take good care of my children and all this, but it's because of deep attachment. But of course, we are also not at that level. So how can we help these people to suffer less because of their attachment?
Showing them a good example. Showing them a good example from your practice. Showing them a good example from your practice. Showing them that you've transformed. You know what's the best way to transform people around you? Is you change. And your change is not advertised. You're not blowing a horn. You're not wearing a t-shirt. Look, I'm spiritual now. Aren't I fabulous? I'm more calmer. Recognize me. So you don't go to them, thank you. Okay? So my point is, if you want people around you, and I'm sure you're talking about people around you, then you need to have very strong transformation in you. Then you'll wake them up. If you don't transform and you just simply talk, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your mother, your father, all of them go, oh yeah, whatever. Why? They're going to look at you. They're going to look at you. So people say, how do I bring my girlfriend to Dharma? How do I bring my boyfriend to Dharma? How do I bring my friend to Dharma? How? The answer is very simple. Bring yourself to Dharma. Once you bring yourself to Dharma, they will transform. Definitely. No one cannot not feel kindness. No one. How strong you practice, you will transform them. Look, how much we practice, let me give you a little hint. How much you practice, you look at yourself. How many people can you bring to the spiritual path? When you talk to them, are you convincing? Can you bring them to the spiritual path? That's how you will know if your practice is effective. If you've been in Dharma this year, this year, 2 year, 3 year, you can't even affect your best friend. You can't even do something with your best friend, or you can't even bring people Dharma to your lover or your friend, and they can't even transform. Forget about all the people you have never met. So you have to check yourself. You want to bring people you love to Dharma? You want to repay the kindness of people in the Dharma? I'm sorry, you want to repay the kindness of people who've been kind to you? Then you need to bring yourself to Dharma. When you bring yourself to the Dharma, you'll repay their kindness. So first step is, you check yourself. How stable you are. How giving you are. How compassionate you are. How forgiving you are. How forgiving you are. How compassionate you are. How much you study. How much you apply what you say. Is how much you can bring other people to Buddhism or Dharma. Okay? And some people, they bring people to Dharma, they're not stable. They go off. Why? We're not stable. How we act. People see. It puts a very strong psychic impression in our minds when we see people. So if you see people 1 week jumping up and down, they're happy, Buddha's fabulous, Buddha is number one. And next week they're jumping up and down on a t-shirt and tearing it and ripping it and cutting it up. Then next week they say, oh, they're sewing up the t-shirt again. They say, oh, I regret it, and they wear it. And the week after that, they're burning the t-shirt. Then the week after that, they're collecting the t-shirts, ashes and putting it in a stupa and worshiping it. We're gonna think, and then they say to us, oh, Buddhism transformed me. You can go, yeah, sure did. You're a psycho now. Yeah, sure, it did transform you. You're a walking Dharma psycho. We call you DP. That's right. So therefore, people observe you. Then people say, oh, how can I help my father? I hear that for years. How do I help my mother? They're looking at you. They're looking at how much you've transformed. How's your motivation? How's your knowledge? Example, like, we're usually fighting with our father, we're usually fighting with our sister, and we stop. We totally stop. We don't even think about it anymore. We just think, oh, whatever. We do my own thing, and I'll be very kind, I'll pray for them. Just leave it. After a while, they'll soften, they'll go, hey, what happened? Why? They can't keep hitting the wall. They can't. So how you can bring other people to Dharma is dependent on your level of practice. Example, when I was 15 and 16, I was teaching Dharma to my mother. I got beaten back for it. She used to slap me silly for it. But now when I teach Dharma to people, the chances are less. I can go to the gym, I can go to dry cleaners, anywhere. If I start talking Dharma, chances are when I finish with them, they'll be chanting Mixama. They'll be chanting Tsongkhapa's mantra. That's right, look at Miss Nepal. When I'm done with them, am I showing off? No, I'm not showing off. I have transformed the last 20 years. I haven't transformed a lot, but enough that people are not stupid, they can feel it. But if it was 20 years ago, it was very difficult. But there are some people, there are 20 years later, they still can't do anything for other people or themselves. Why? They haven't applied the Dharma. So if you want to change people around you, you want to help people around you, and you want to affect people around you, you have to show it. And it has to be real. And then you will see troves of people coming to the Dharma when you speak, when you talk. What's the Dharma? Transformation of the mind. So those of us, some of us wish to be Dharma teachers. Some of us wish to be lineage holders. Some of us wish to spread Dharma to others. How do you do that? You study, and you apply, and you transform. And you hold your vows. When you do that, you build up a nucleus energy that will explode into benefiting others. You have to do it yourself. That's why I tell people, keep their commitments. Do their tzok. Hold their refuge vows. Even if you don't have refuge vows, hold it as if you do, because they're ethical. Let your protector and let your God be the fear of karma. Why? You take responsibility. That's beautiful. It's much more beautiful. So therefore, if we can make headway with people around us, if we can't help them to transform and change, and in fact, our spiritual practice disgusts them, and it makes them turn off, most likely is that we are very pretentious and fake. That is most likely the case. We are pretentious and fake. So if you hear people say, oh, I've been living with my girlfriend, I've been living with my boyfriend 5 years, they hate it, they don't like this, they don't like that, most likely it's because you're not transforming. So they're not stupid. They're so close with you, they sleep with you, they eat with you, they drive around with you, they live with you, so they can see you haven't changed. So what you're talking about, they're just, whatever. Like, they're having compassion on you to just let you talk. Think about it. So it starts where here. How do we start? Hold our vows. When we talk, whatever we say, we mean it. We don't burden emotionally other people. We don't emotionally burden other people. Meaning, how do we emotionally burden other people? By always making them repeat and force and remind us, and we always say the nasty mantra, I forgot. You know, the mantra, I forgot, is worse than I hate you. I hate you, say bye-bye, see you later. If you say, I forgot, you're seeking forgiveness. They forgive you, then you say it again, I forgot. Then they forgive you again, I forgot. How many times do you want them to forgive you? After a while, they're going to beat you up. So it's a very bad mantra. If you want to chase people away, chase away patrons, chase away friends, make people pissed off, make people hate you, and make people not like you, you tell them, I forgot. I don't remember. Or you completely have no sense about it. You chase everybody away. That's a very powerful mantra. It's the best way to create enemies. It's the best way to destroy yourself. Very best. So if you want to chase away friends and enemies and all that, you just tell them, I forgot. You know, go work for somebody you hate. Whatever they tell you, you say, okay, later, you didn't do it. I forgot. They say, see you later, fired. They'll pay you to go. So you think about it. To be emotionally selfish is to always have people remind you. You forget, you never push yourself, and you never take responsibility for things. That is emotional selfishness. If you're emotionally selfish, most likely you'll be physically selfish. If you're physically selfish, most likely it's very hard for you to accomplish work or what you want to do or what you want to accomplish. Why? The energy you send forth to people and what people feel around you will not be positive. Not positive at all. So we have to think about that. It's very, very important. Okay, questions? That's very good. That's very good. I like that question. It's a Dharma talk. I like questions that make us think deeper. Makes me think deeper. I read that book 20 years ago. I was like, oh, what was it? I want to look stupid for a shin. What was it? But I remember. Now I can give you a JP smile. We're not talking about David and his lips. Relax. Remember? Every day, for 10 minutes, he stretches it out. Oh, look, he's excited. I'm going to dwell deeper into why that excites you. I can't say.